This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. April Williams described the memes that have emerged from encounters between some white women and men, quote, living while black. So how do we get to a better place? Jesse Daniels is a sociology professor at Hunter College in the CUNY Graduate Center and author of the upcoming book, Undoing White Womanhood.
There's real deadly power in a white woman calling 911 or pointing her finger at a person of color saying he's the one that did it. And that really connects to a much longer history in the United States. I mean, we could go all the way back to slavery, but I think most people have a more recent memory of someone like Carolyn Bryant, who pointed a finger at Emmett Till and got him quite literally killed, brutally so, and then many decades later recanted, said it didn't happen. And that specific kind of power, I think, really hasn't been examined thoroughly.
So let's talk about the long-term impact of that power. You noted that the 911 emergency call system we have is in many ways an outgrowth of the iconic murder of a woman, Kitty Genovese, in Queens, New York.
Yeah, this is an interesting and terrible story. Kitty Genovese, as many people know, was raped and murdered trying to get home from her job tending bar one night and was attacked just outside of her apartment. The reporting at the time was that dozens of people heard her cries for help and didn't call anyone. We know later that that's not actually what happened, but that story kind of lived on about her murder. And what many people began to clamor for after that was an easy way to call the police. Her surviving brother, in a documentary just a couple of years ago, said that he and the family look on the 911 system as one of the silver linings of her brutal murder. But what's interesting to me is that it really connects to this history of white women and this mythology of the brutal black man. That is a kind of central story in the American cultural landscape. I mean, Ida B. Wells Burnett wrote in The Red Record, 1895, that the big lie of lynching was that white women were being attacked by black men. And that story is deeply encoded in the American culture.
How in our daily lives can we disrupt this idea?
That's a great question. I think, you know, one of the ways that we can disrupt this in our daily lives is by treating other people with respect and following the rules that everybody else has to follow. There was another meme that appeared on the internet recently. It's a woman who's, I don't know, in her 50s or 60s. She's driving a pickup truck and a police officer stops her to give her a ticket. It's like an $80 ticket. And she keeps arguing with him that she doesn't deserve it and he doesn't understand that she doesn't deserve it. She rolls up her window and drives away.
The Oklahoma woman who was resisting arrest after she was pulled over for a broken taillight and refused the ticket and yelled at the officer was Deborah Hamill, 65 years old. "Yeah, I tried to kick you because I'm a country girl," she told the officer. "I don't like being thrown on the floor."
"You don't want to sign it?"
"No, because I don't think that I deserve to pay $80 for something that is fixable and I can fix it,
right,
if that's all you want
to
do."
"Go ahead, step out of the car."
"Why?"
"Because you're under arrest. Step out. Step out of the vehicle."
"No, I'm not."
"Step out."
It ends up with her on the ground, out of her truck, under arrest. There's something about that that's so embodies this meme of white women who don't think that the rules apply to them. So, I mean, I think one of the ways that we can disrupt the specialness that's been attached to white womanhood in our daily lives is to recognize that we're not that special, that we have to follow the rules like everybody else. Amusing as that video is to watch, if you flip the script and you imagine her as a black woman or as a Latinx woman, and certainly if she were a black man, you know, they might have ended up dead at the end of that encounter. And that's not funny at all. And that's part of why this is so serious to me.
You have a book coming out soon called Undoing White Womanhood. What were you driven to examine in that book?
Well, I've really been thinking about this for decades now. Most of my research has been on white supremacists, white nationalists, that sort of thing. And when I was spending a lot of time at Stormfront, for example, So white supremacist portal, for a long time, it was the largest one, the only one online. And, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center's linked at least 100 murders from people who had some association to Stormfront. It's a vile place on the internet. And a place that I wandered into on that portal was a whole discussion board called the Ladies Only Forum. And it was populated by white women. And they were talking about equal pay for equal work. Abortion rights, you know, how silly and foolish the men in their lives are. It sounded so ordinary and so feminist. And that really threw me. I mean, I was like, what's going on here? And part of what I concluded is that feminism, if it doesn't have a central understanding of race and racism, is completely compatible with white supremacy.
What do you want readers to take away from your book?
Well, what I really want readers to understand is that we white women have a specific cultural history in this country, and we have a real responsibility to not do more harm as white women, not to continue to do harm. We've got to do better.
Thank you so much.
It was great talking to you.
Jesse Daniels is a faculty associate at the Harvard Berkman Klein Center and a sociology professor at Hunter College and the CUNY Graduate Center.
Coming up, the president's newest nemesis is also his best friend, Twitter.
This is On the Media.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.